are listening to Setting History Straight with Linda Watson on Hebrew Nation Radio.
So the 12 tribes, we're going to cover their history today. And we're going to basically cover what is being mentioned in Genesis 49, because it says in the last days, I'm going to tell you who you're going to be. And that's what he tells you from the get-go. All right. So this is where they would eventually get to. All of these places, you know, are the places that they would get to. Now, not all of them are on here, but there's some of them on here. We're going to talk about all of them. And we'll start here with Genesis 49, verse 2. You know, today, to really cancel out the white people. I mean, that's been Satan's plan all along. Well, plan A is somehow to get rid of them. Plan B was to bring all the immigrants in so you mix with them and you just lose your identity. And so people in the churches say, well, identity is not important. We don't need to worry about our identity, who we are. That's not important. Well, the whole Bible, the whole Old Testament is about a man who has a family that becomes a nation. So how could you say that is not important? And so this is, I think people have heard this so much in their churches that they just believe it. And they said, they almost think it's something wrong with even going to look. And so we're going to dive into that today. So it says, gather yourself together, you sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel, your father. And it says, and Jacob said unto his sons, gather yourself together, that I may tell you which shall befall you in the last days. So he's going to tell you where you're going to be, because you have lost your identity. You have lost your identity. This nation doesn't know their Israel. So we're going to start here, the migration of Europe. I have some short little videos in here.
In the Middle Ages, a new civilization was forged on the European continent. Nobles and kings, faith and warfare, culture and learning, trade and innovation, these set the foundations of the modern era. This is the story of how Europe was born. In the first 2 centuries CE, the vast Roman Empire engulfed the Mediterranean Sea. It was a time of stability, prosperity, and peace, the Pax Romana.
Okay, so do y'all notice how Rome is totally surrounds the Mediterranean Sea? That's very important, because she's been talked about in scripture as Chittim. And Chittim is that land that surrounded the Mediterranean Sea. So that every time you see Chittim, you know you're talking about Rome. And this is the actual location.
Citizens enjoyed its flourishing culture, fair quality of life, and relative security. This was achieved through Rome's centralized government and advanced infrastructure. In the remote eastern margins of the empire, a new religion was born, Christianity. Beginning as a small Jewish sect, it slowly spread throughout the pagan Roman world. In the 4th century, it was embraced by the emperors, becoming the official state religion. But by then, Rome's glory days were over. The empire was suffering from inflation, plagues, famine, and invasions. Managing it from a single center was becoming impossible. In 395 CE, the empire was divided in two. A Western empire with Rome as its capital, and an Eastern one ruled from Constantinople, also known as the Byzantine Empire. While the East was urban, rich, and prosperous, the West was rural, poor, and weak. It didn't last long. In the deep forests beyond the empire's borders, barbarian peoples were on the move. These were mostly Germanic tribes led by warlords and their loyal bands of warriors. These groups were pressing harder and harder on the Rhine and Danube rivers. Without much choice, the Western Empire began allowing them entry. Eventually, the frontiers were breached, enabling various peoples to migrate and settle within the borders of the empire. Whether guests or invaders, these peoples carved up Roman territory while imperial authority was crumbling. In 476, the barbarian leader Odoacer deposed the last emperor of the Western Roman Empire, Romulus Augustulus. This child emperor had no real power, but his removal stands as a milestone. The Western Roman Empire was no more. The so-called Dark Ages had begun. Romans, Christians, barbarians, these were the three main ingredients that combined to create medieval Europe.
Okay, we want to talk just briefly about this. And all this was a central overview of Europe and how it came together. I'm going to try to talk about each one of the tribes as they leave out of the land in the Middle East. That's what we want to cover, is how, you know, what were they like when they left out of the Middle East. Now, when they came in, first of all, how do you even know that they went, that they were the tribes? How do you know that Europe is the tribes of Israel? So how, there's only two things that you have to know. One is Josephus wrote in his history, he said the tribes of Israel are across the Euphrates River. And he said, they're an immense multitude. They're a huge bunch of people. And so this would have been right here where we're talking about. You see where Parthia is. That's what he was referring to, because that was the area from the land of the Euphrates up had fallen. It was an agreement with Mark Antony that they would receive this territory. Mark Antony was the Roman emperor at the time. And this happened right before the Messiah. So this Parthia and the sister nation, which is Scythia, were the concentrated areas where the Israelites went. Now, as we unfold this history, you're going to see that. Okay. Now, the second proof comes from the 9th edition of the British Britannica, which talks about Scythia. And it says all the people that lived in that region were the ones that moved from Scythia into Western Europe. So that's really very significant, because now with those two pieces, you know who these people are, because Josephus is identifying. So Parthia was not always just called Parthia. Sometimes they called it Bactra, or the Bactrian Empire. You can see it right here. And it's really interesting because they named many of their cities. You see the city names here? These are all Israelite city names. Look at Gaza. You have Bactra. You have, this one is right here, is just like the name Isaac without the I. And I think this was their capital at one point. Well, here's another one. Here you can even see Samaria there. Here's Iran. This is where we got Iran, because this is also the area that Iran was in, because Persia would eventually come in and take over Parthia. Now, these are called the two forgotten empires because they leave them completely out of history. Remember that your history is being written by the Romans and the Greeks. And so they leave these people out of history almost totally. But you would have at least 13 battles. The Parthians went to war with Rome 13 times, and Rome was never able to defeat them. And interesting, because Caesar was planning an invasion of Parthia, and he was going the next day, but he wound up being killed before he went. So if he hadn't, he would have gone in and taken down Parthia, I'm sure of it, because he never lost any battles. So interesting, it's just very interesting, because these two places, Rome never went to war with Scythia, because Tacitus wrote about Scythia. He was a Roman historian, and he said nobody was more powerful than the Scythians. They were the most powerful army on the face of the earth. And see, that lines up with even what we see today, you know, with our people. There have always been a warlike people. It's just a fact. So now, the first tribe I want to cover is Dan. And I'm going to mention at some other point, I'm going to go in and teach the Trojan Kings because it's so much to it that I can't cover it all in here. So the Trojan Kings actually came out first before Dan did. They migrated out first, and those were the tribe of Judah from the tribe of Zerah. Okay, now Zerah was one of the two sons of Tamar that was Judah's children. Judah's had two sons by his daughter-in-law, if you remember Tamar, and one of them was Zerah. Zerah was the one that went into Troy and built up Troy, and then he had a brother that went into Athens, which was in Greece, the area of Greece, and built up Greece. So Dan, the tribe of Dan, is the Irish people. Their symbol was the snake and an eagle. They would put an eagle on their shield. And so in the Odyssey, the story that's the oldest known story to man, they talk about the tribe of Dan in there. They call the Danoids, okay? And it says they had a shield on an eagle on their shield. And they were one of the tribes that brought down Troy. So when Troy fell, Thor, which is a real person, he's not on the Captain America, okay? He was a real person, took 12,000 of the troops and brought them to around the Black Sea area, really closer to Azor. And he settled them in there. And then Aeneas came out of Troy. He first went to Carthage. And there's a whole story behind that because he fell in love with the queen of Carthage. Then he went up to Rome and he began to settle in Rome. He was the first Roman emperor, and his name was Aeneas. And history really records about him. So these were not, the Trojans were not just people that people call a legend, although today they do call them a legend, but there is history to back up these stories. So I find now that I go out and do the research, I find that they're actually including more of the correct history in it because they're seeing it so obvious. But they're not ever going to be willing to say that we are the tribes of Israel. They're not going to ever do that. Now, I'm going to read what Dan, his mother was Bilhah, with a handmaid. She was one of the handmaids. She was the handmaid to, I think, Leah. So Genesis 49, verse 16, Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. That was his job. He was to be like a policeman. He was like to be judges. That's what his job was among the tribes. And he's told that he'll have to wait for his salvation. And I think the reason is right here because he has such a corrupted system of courts. And you notice there's a lot of people that were in when Dan, which is the Irish people, came in, they settled in two places. They settled around Boston and they settled in New York City. Those are the two main places they settled. So you have this huge amount of Irish people in New York. And it's interesting because many of those people are associated with the government, or they're associated with the police force. The Irish policemen are just a very common, talked about everywhere. Then it comes back in verse 17. It says Dan is like a serpent, an adder in the path. He bites the heel of a horse and he rears up. So he's kind of sneaky. He's off somewhere hid and he reaches out and he bites the hoof. I always think about how policemen pull you over. They're sneaking off on the side. You don't see them. And then they come out of nowhere and they catch you. But this is what I'm referring to when I say he's like an adder. You can see that he was in this area because look at all the rivers that are named with Dan. Don River, you had the Dnieper, you have the Blue Dan, there's another one over here that's named after Dan. Plus, you have all these cities. Do you see all these cities named after Dan? And Denmark means the mark of Dan or the Dan's land. So interesting It's what it meant is that everywhere they went, they named something after themselves. You even had Dunkirk, if you remember Dunkirk. So that's what that's referring.
Could the Danites, who lived in Canaan, modern-day Israel, really be related to the Danoi, who lived in Mycenae, modern-day Greece? Let's see what we know about these two peoples from the ancient texts. In Homer's Odyssey, we discovered that the Danoi are migrant people. Even the word Odyssey is literally associated with these migrants. Second, we learned that they are mighty warriors that chase Helen by ship to Troy. Even the great Achilles fights in their ranks. Third, they are expert craftsmen who build the famous wooden horse that fools the Trojans. And finally, the Danoi are pagans who worship many gods. In the Bible, we find a similar profile for the Danites. We first hear about them in the story of Moses when he leaves Egypt with his 12 tribes heading to the Holy Land. The mysterious Danites decide not to take their share and instead are the only tribe to migrate. They head north with 600 skilled warriors to a town called Laish, which they conquer and rename Dan, modern-day Tel Dan. The most famous of the Danites is Samson, a mighty warrior, more similar to the Greek Hercules than other Hebrew prophets. We also learn that the Danites are expert craftsmen, chosen to build the sacred gold-laden Ark of the Covenant. The Bible then shuns the Danites for building a temple in direct competition to Solomon's temple, where they worshipped false gods. So in the ancient text, the Danites and the Danoi sound quite similar.
It tells us something of a connection with the Aegean.
The Bible does give us a cryptic passage called the Song of Deborah, which would seem to state that the Danites are seafarers. The passage describes a famous battle between the 12 tribes of Israel and their oppressors, the Canaanites, led by their general Sisera. In the passage, the Israelite leader Deborah leads the Israelites to battle. But one of those tribes, the Danites, does not join them. They stay in their ships. I've come to Tel Dor, located on the northern coast of Israel. This archaeological site was at one time inhabited by the Cheker, a sea peoples with connections to the Aegean. Their association with this place was written about on a famous Egyptian papyrus called The Story of Wenamun. But why would we find the Danites all the way in Greece? Maybe, during the exodus from Egypt, some Danites traveled by land to Canaan, while others migrated north by ship to the Aegean. In order to prove that the fighters at Troy who built the wooden horse were actually Danites, we need to find this Israelite tribe in Greece.
The prophetess Deborah criticizes the tribe of Dan for not joining the battle, not fighting against Sisera. She says something that's historically very important. She's telling us, A, they didn't join. They're a marginal tribe. They're sometimes in the Confederation, sometimes out. And secondly, they stayed in their ships. There's the Mediterranean. There are ships. What's she telling us?
That the Danites were seafarers. After leaving Egypt with Moses, some of the Danites may have migrated north by sea and ended up in an area of the Aegean called Mycenae to become the Danoi written about in Homer's Iliad.
Land ho!
But can we find archaeological evidence of this migration? Amazingly enough, right after the Jews leave Egypt, vast quantities of gold mysteriously appear in Mycenae, in what are called shaft tombs. To add to the striking discovery, archaeologists believe this gold came from Egypt. But do we have a reason to think the gold came via the Danites? When the Danites helped build the Ark of the Covenant, they covered it in gold. So we know that they are expert goldsmiths. It would make sense that they would have brought their craft and their precious metal to the Aegean. If the Danoi are really Danites who went north to Greece after the Exodus,
they would most likely have stayed in contact with their fellow relatives in Israel.
We find examples of whoring after false gods that we hear about in the Bible.
We have a whole series of standing stones at Tel Dan.
I'm in Tel Dan with archaeologist David Ilan, who has one more site to show me, a unique tomb, unlike other tombs found in Israel.
I've waited so long to see this tomb. I've read about it, heard about it. They call it the Mycenaean tomb. What makes this tomb special or Mycenaean or anything like that?
At the same time, there are southern Israelite material culture elements here as well. There's an amalgamation here of the two, which in a way really is what the Bible tells us the Danites are, people that stay by their boats by the sea. They're a different group. There's something strange about them. They don't quite belong. And that may be because they're somewhat Aegean in background and in behavior.
So here we are at the end of our quest, at the site that directly connects the biblical Danites with the Homeric Danoi. In our search, we found textual and archaeological evidence corroborating the Danites' biblical journey. And we've discovered both the Danites and the Danoi were skilled sailors, expert goldsmiths, and had similar religious beliefs. Most importantly, we found the definitive link that bonds these two migrant cultures. A shaft tomb in which gold and other Mycenaean treasures were discovered that speak of a direct connection between Israel and faraway Greece.
Okay, so now this is the piece that took me so long to find, because they have tried to hide this piece right here. And that once Dan left Greece, and he left about 1200, around 1200 BC, he left out and went to Ireland. There was a lot of turmoil going on at that time. And so that's one of the reasons that he left out and went. But you also had, he was the seafaring people, and he was the one that helped take down Troy. He also helped take down, he was the seafaring people. He helped take down the Hittites. The Hittites would have been, you remember, they were associated with Esau, because Esau married two of the queens or two princesses from the Hittites. And the Hittites are known as the people with the thousand gods, which is very interesting, because now you pick up on the history in India in the Vesta, and it says that they traveled, these people out of the Middle East traveled to India, and they had blonde hair and blue eyes. So apparently the people in India didn't. So when they traveled to India, it says that's how India got their gods, is through these people when they came into the land. They believed in multiple gods. So very interesting history that we see taking place. And Dan would eventually go to Ireland. Now that history has been written by somebody named Geoffrey Keating. He wrote around the 12th century. They say the 16th century here, but I think he wrote around the 12th century. And he absolutely connects them to the Danans, which we're going to see here. Now, this guy is the only one on the internet that is teaching this.
Dan in Ireland. Ancient Irish history speaks of two tribes which conquered Ireland. Both the Annals of Ireland by the Four Masters from 1636, a work based on much older material, and Geoffrey Keating's History of Ireland from 1634, says that a people called the Tuatha Dé Danann, meaning the tribe of Danann, conquered Ireland around 1200 BC. Around 1000 BC, another people, the Milesians, arrived and became the masters of Ireland. The Tuatha Dé Danann and the Milesians were of the same people, because when the Milesians arrived, they were able to communicate with the Tuatha Dé Danann in their own language. According to the Annals of Ireland by the Four Masters, the Tuatha Dé Danann had lived a long time in Greece and had been working closely with the Phoenicians. According to Geoffrey Keating, the Milesians were also called Scots, because they had lived in Scythia, the area north of the Black Sea, for 150 years after they left their homeland. After the Milesians or the Scots left Scythia, they continued to Greece and then to Spain and finally to Ireland. It was from these Milesians or Scots that Ireland got its ancient name Scotia. The Romans also called Ireland Scotia. It was only in the 9th century AD that the name Scotia was applied to the northern part of the island of Great Britain, which we today call Scotland. The noted Irish historian A.M. Sullivan in The Story of Ireland provided further connections between the Milesians and the Israelites. We quote, "The Milesian colony reached Ireland from Spain, but they were not Spaniards. They were an eastern people who had tarried in that country on their way westward, seeking, they said, an island promised to the posterity of their ancestor Gadelius. Moved by this mysterious purpose to fulfill their destiny, they had passed from land to land, from the shores of Asia across the wide expanse of southern Europe, bearing aloft through all their wanderings the sacred banner, which symbolized to them at once their origin and their mission, the blessing and the promise given to their race. This celebrated standard, the sacred banner of the Milesians, was a flag on which was represented a dead serpent and the rod of Moses." Unquote from A.M. Sullivan, The Story of Ireland, page 12. Sullivan continues and explains that their ancestor Gadelius, who was the grandson of the king of the Scythians, had been bitten by a snake. The Scythians were living close to the Israelites, and Gadelius's father went to Moses and asked him to heal his son, which Moses did. A Spanish priest, Joaquin Villanueva, even wrote a book entitled Phoenician Ireland in 1837, where he sought to prove that the Tuatha De Danann and the Irish in general were of Phoenician origin. In this book he wrote that the ancestors of the Irish were the people of the city of Dan, where they worshipped the graven image given to them by Micah and where King Jeroboam of Israel set up the golden calf. These references are from the Book of Judges and are about the tribe of Dan and not about Phoenicians. And we have this information from John Cox Scholar's book, Dan, the Pioneer of Israel.
So you can hear some of this. I'm not going to go through all of this, but you can hear some of this, how they actually came out of this area. You see, they would have came out of Egypt. Now, many people think because they came out of Egypt, I'm talking about the Milesians came out of Egypt. They think they're Egyptians, but no, at that point, the Israelites were in Egypt in bondage, if you remember. The 1200th century, they did not come out for the Exodus until the 14th century. So the 14th century was when they began to come into the land of Israel. The date is 1445 is what the date that they give for the Exodus. So these people had already moved out. The tribe of Dan had already moved out. And remember, there was a Pharaoh that did not remember Joseph. I think there was some kind of persecution going on with some of the people, and some of them migrated out. And the Milesians would not have been Egyptians. They would have been from the tribe of Zerah. And that would have been one of the sons of Judah. So they migrated out. And so this is the only man that I could find on the internet. And I searched for 4 hours to find history on this, because they really have covered up this up. But it's written in the Irish history. So the Irish people have a volume, 14 volume series on their history. It was written by Geoffrey Keating, and he writes about it. But for some reason, they want to leave all that stuff out. Well, the tribe of Dan were pagan worshipers. They were pagan worshipers. That's why they migrated out, because they didn't fit in. And they were some of the first people that brought paganism into the tribes of the Israel. So, and it happened again when our nation was set up, because it was the Irish people that brought in Christmas and Easter. Because we didn't have Christmas and Easter in this country until the Irish people came here. Do y'all understand this? So this is the reason why it says here that Dan, you will wait for your salvation. And when the Protestant Reformation happened, they never went through the Protestant Reformation. They stayed Catholic the entire time. And so that's how you can tell Irish people from Scotch-Irish people, because Scotch-Irish people are mainly the ones in the South. But they would be Protestant, but the Catholics usually are Irish, okay? If the Irish people are usually always Catholic. So because they just never changed. It says they talked about how he leaped from Bishaw. Now, Bishaw was the place where King Og was. That was where King Og was. He was taken down. Remember when they began to move into the land of Cana, they took down King Og. And it says that King Og had a bed that was 13 foot long. These were giants. They were giants. So, these people are extremely, all of these people were extremely warlike. That's an important thing to know. Now, the next one to migrate out would be Naphtali. And some people call it Natali. They wound up in Norway, but they were the White Huns. That's why, and they have the deer as their symbol. And their mother was Bila. It says he is like a hind let loose. He gives goodly words. So you find a lot of these people that are from this tribe in Lowell also, just like you found them in with Dan. They tend to be lawyers. It says they give goodly words. Do y'all see that? And they're a little bit more morally loose. And you can see that in Norway and Sweden, in that area, you see that they're much more morally loose than the other tribes. So that's one of the reasons why he's saying that. And he says that they'd be blessed. It goes on. And this is where they would eventually go, because when Israel fell, they'd already, these Naphtali had already moved out. They moved out. And they had been in China for at least about 1,000 B.C. They were already in China. And so interesting, they came in around the Altan Mountains. That's where they lived in. You can see it here on the screen, the Altan Mountains. That's where they lived. And interesting, because the first record of them is that they fought the Chinese in 941 B.C., that's the first recorded. So that's how long we know they've been there. Okay. And China built the Great Wall to keep them out, because the White Huns were a very aggressive people. At one point in history, right in this area right here, which is just under the Black Sea, there was a huge fight with the Israelite tribes, and it split in four directions. They went, some of them went this way, some of them went down, some of them went up, some went to the side, but they split. And this was shortly around the time, maybe just a little bit before the time of Israel being taken down by Assyria. So all of these tribes that had moved in here had this huge battle. And this was very unusual for them to fight among themselves. It was really very unusual. And even today, we don't fight with Europe. All right, so there was a gold rush that happened. And these people came in, we're told they came in wagons. Herodotus wrote that. He's the father of history. And he said that, around 650, there was this gold rush in the Altan Mountain region. Well, guess who found the gold? It's pretty easy, interesting to know that it had to be the White Huns that found the gold, because they were already up there. So many people began to migrate at that time up into China and up into that area because of the gold rush. Now, the White Huns would sign a peace treaty finally after 1,000 years of battling with China. They would sign a peace treaty in 217 AD, right before the fall, like a year or so before the fall of Parthia. Now, Parthia, remember, I just told y'all about Parthia. It was the place that Rome went to war with 13 times. Because Rome was landlocked, she could not move. She couldn't move to be able to trade with the East. And everybody wanted to trade with the East. So she could not move because Parthia was in her route. So that's why they had so many battles. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But the Huns would now start coming out of China, and they would start moving their way now into Europe. And eventually, they would get all the way up to Norway, we've been told. And so that's just, that begins the period we call that Great Migration. Anybody have any questions they want to ask while we're going through this? I'm going to play you the thing on the Huns. I just love these people. This is a short one.
Empires that rose, dominated, and then vanished, leaving behind only whispers and fragments. One of the most mysterious of these is the Hephthalite Empire, often called the White Huns. For a century, they were the terror of Central Asia, a military force that humbled mighty empires like Persia and India. Yet today, they are largely forgotten. Like so many steppe peoples before and after them, their society was built around the horse. The horse was their vehicle, their weapon, and their sustenance. It gave them unparalleled mobility, allowing their armies to cover vast distances at incredible speeds, striking without warning and disappearing back into the grasslands. To understand the meteoric rise of the Hephthalites, we must first look at the world they entered. The 5th century CE was an age of profound change and instability across Eurasia. In the West, the Roman Empire was crumbling under the weight of internal decay and external pressures from migrating peoples. The lifeblood of this region was the legendary Silk Road. This was not a single road, but a sprawling network of caravan trails and oasis cities. The Hephthalites did not emerge on the world stage with a whisper. They arrived with the force of a thunderclap. They first swept south from their homeland in the Altai Mountains. A Hephthalite army was a terrifying spectacle, a swirling mass of horsemen who could shower their enemies with arrows from a distance, feign retreats to lure them into traps. The clash between the Hephthalites and the Sasanian Empire was a defining conflict of the 5th and 6th centuries. The Sasanians underestimated the Hephthalites at their peril. The conflict escalated dramatically under the Sasanian king Peroz I.
This is Persia.
Determined to crush the Hephthalite threat once and for all, Peroz led multiple campaigns against them. The Hephthalite king used classic steppe cunning. He lured the overconfident Persian army deep into his territory near Herat, into a field where he had dug a massive, camouflaged anti-cavalry ditch. The result was an absolute catastrophe for the Sasanians. The charging Persian heavy cavalry plunged headlong into the hidden trench. While one wing of the Hephthalite Empire was humbling the Persians, another was battering down the gates of India. In the late 5th century, the Gupta Empire was the shining jewel of South Asia. It was a realm renowned for its peace, prosperity. The Hephthalites, known in Indian sources as the Hunas, saw the wealth of the Gupta domains as an irresistible prize, and they began to push relentlessly through the mountain passes of the northwest. The initial Gupta response was strong. The Emperor Skandagupta is celebrated in inscriptions for having inflicted a crushing defeat on the Hunas around 458 CE. The Hephthalite Empire was built on more than just military might. It was financed by its strategic control over the most lucrative trade network in the ancient world, the Silk Road. Empires that rose.
I'm going to stop right there. So that it's just a fascinating story about the White Huns, because they don't, historians say we know so little about them. We have only pieces from other people's history that tell about them. But that is the tribe of Nateli or Naphtali. They call it Naphtali or Nateli. Well, their original name was the Hebrians, okay? So it's very close to the same identical name. Okay, so now we want to get to the story of Gad, which is the Germans, and his mother is Zelpa. Okay, and let's see what the scripture says about him in a few minutes here. So these people were the ones that took down Rome. They came when Parthia fell, and she fell in 223 AD. When she fell, the people began to scatter because Persia had come in and pushed them out. They began to scatter up the Blue Danube into Europe. And so they would eventually be the ones that would take down Rome in 410. So interesting, because they went to war. Parthia went to war with them for 400 years, 13 times, never defeated them. So finally, after all those years, then these people that are the Parthians come back in as the Goths and take down the Roman Empire. They take down the Roman Empire after fighting them all those years. It had to be unbelievable experience for them. And so it actually talks about it in scripture. I'm going to show it to you. Let me hit my button here. The Goths, like I said, went to war with them 13 times, and they were at war with them for 400 years. Now, look at the verse here. Gad is a troop, shall overcome him. That is Esau, because Rome really was settled by some of the descendants of Esau. We don't have time to prove it here now, but he was. But he shall overcome at last. So he's going to be taken. He's going to take a hit by Esau, but he's going to overcome him at last. And so that's what it's talking about here, that these German, it was mainly German people. The reason they call them German is because they came out of Germany. They had been pushed. They were being pushed out at the same time they were being pushed out by the Sarmatians. Now, the Sarmatians was a tribe in Russia. It was a tribe in Russia. And Herodotus called that tribe the tribe of Gog. How interesting is that? So when you see the word Sarmatians, that's who it was. That's who Herodotus said it was. And they pushed those people. They began to push the people out of Scythia, and they began to push the people out of Parthia. At the same time, you had the White Huns. They have been pushed out of China. So they're all migrating now. They're all migrating into Europe. And so all of this is happening on Rome at one time. Well, when because of all of the things that were going on, if you remember Constantine, he takes and he moves his empire to Constantinople, which is in the Western, and started the Byzantine Empire. And because the Western European Empire was crumbling at that time because of all the migrants coming in. Do y'all understand what I'm talking about here? So Gad, it says would be the German people. He said they would enlarge Gad, 1/4 of all the white Anglo-Saxon type of people, European people, are in this country are German. Okay, and it talks about he tears the arm off the crown of the head. He will do this when he took down Rome. That's he did it when he took down Rome, because he would be the tribe that takes down Rome. See, people don't know this history, but it's amazing history. And there's much more to it. There's so much more to it that I could tell, but we have only so much time. So he's also known as he's in law and involved in law and justice in Israel. But he is basically the warlike tribe. Many people that are Germans wind up in the military, and also many people that are from the South, which they don't even know they're Judah, wind up in the military, which they call them the Scottish people. It's really interesting. All right, so I'm going to tell you, I'm going to play the short little clip on the Goths. This is really interesting history.
Among the most important tribes of this migratory period were the Goths, Visigoths, and Ostrogoths, Germanic peoples who had enormous influence on the early medieval European period. The first written documents mentioning the Goths date back to the 1st century AD,
Some mentioned that this people had migrated from Scandinavia to the ancient region of Germania and territories near the Black Sea. And, at some point, they moved to lands further south. The Roman historian Tacitus, who first encountered the gods in Germany, described them as a cohesive race composed of Germanic peoples, native to their land, and fierce fighters. After taking up land in the steppes of the ancient region of Scythia, the Goths quickly adopted several nomadic customs from the Sarmatians, and became excellent farmers and sailors. According to ancient sources, the Goths were always described as tall, athletic people, with light hair and light eyes, and a serious, haughty demeanor. In general, the Goths spoke a German dialect known as the Gothic language. However, Gothic Christianity, whose main doctrine was Arianism, clearly influenced the religious beliefs of medieval Europe. Some documents mention that, as early as 240 AD, the Goths were often conscripted into the Roman army to...
Okay, now that's an important point that I need to bring out, is that these people, if you remember, the Messiah told the disciples to go into the lost tribes of Israel. And that's what the disciples did. And they taught these people, and they were still Sabbath keepers. They were holy day keepers. That was, when you hear them talk about the Arianism, that was the name they gave their religion. The Romans gave them that name because their leader was Arius at that point. So they just called it the Arians. Okay, and so interesting that they now are rolling themselves into this empire, which has pagans in it, which worship the sun. That's Mithra. And then they also were beginning to develop the Catholic Church at that time. Remember that? So you had three different groups there. It was just turmoil, but they were not allowed, the Romans were not allowed to marry any Goth or any migratory person because they said they were heretics. And so they passed a law that they could not marry any of the Germanic tribes that were coming in. Interesting, isn't it?
Really influenced the religious beliefs of medieval Europe. Some documents mention that, as early as 240 AD, the Goths were often conscripted into the Roman army to fight in Roman-Persian conflicts. In the last decades of the 3rd century, many people fled to the Dacia region of the Roman Empire, probably driven out by the Goths. To contain the Goth invasions, the Roman Emperor, Constantine I, helped the Sarmatians settle on the northern banks of the Danube River to fend off attacks from the Goths, reinforcing the Roman frontier. Between 335 and 336, Constantine carried out military campaigns on the Danube, defeating many Gothic tribes. Contemporary Roman sources refer to the Goths not so much as humans, but as dangerous plagues. After driving the Romans from much of the European continent, the Goths ruled a large swath of territory, from present-day Germany to the Danube and Don rivers in Eastern Europe, plus the Black Sea in the south and the Baltic Sea in the north. Trying to find refuge, some Gothic tribes fled to the Eastern Roman Empire, where they received help from Emperor Flavius Julius Valens in 376. But, because of the Goths' history of violence and looting, the Romans decided to take cruel revenge, imposing high taxes and shameful living conditions on the refugees. Soon after, they began to starve, and some had to sell their children to Roman slave traders in exchange for dog meat as food. Enraged by these living conditions, the leader of the Gothic refugees, Fritigern, sparked a full-scale rebellion in Thrace. The subsequent conflict became known as the Gothic War, and lasted several years. The conflict peaked at the Battle of Adrianople in 378, where the Goths defeated the Romans, and Emperor Flavius Julius Valens was killed. After that, the Goths split into two main branches, the Visigoths, a name that literally means Western Goths, and the Ostrogoths, the Eastern Goths. The division occurred because of political differences and noble lineages between the tribes. The Visigoths agreed to sign alliances with Rome, living within Western Roman territory, while the Ostrogoths were subjects of the Huns and lived in the occupied lands of the Eastern Roman Empire. Around 395, the first king of the Visigoths emerged, Alaric I, a promising Gothic warrior who had served in the Roman army under Emperor Theodosius I. Alaric was one of the few survivors of the terrible Battle of Frigidus, where he fought in the service of Emperor Theodosius. 10,000 Goths and members of other barbarian tribes died in that clash. This episode, coupled with the disregard the Romans showed for Goth warriors fallen in battle, enraged Alaric against Rome. Alaric invaded Italy in 402 and 407. Finally, in 410, Alaric commanded a successful siege against Rome, which was overrun and plundered. Although the riches of the city were looted, the civilians of Rome were treated humanely, and only a few buildings were burned. With the defeat of the main European rivals for power, Alaric and the Visigoths established a kingdom in the region of Gaul, present-day France. At first, it was a peripheral nation of the Roman Empire, before they expanded their territory to include areas known as Spain and Portugal on the Iberian Peninsula, forming the Visigothic Kingdom that lasted until 711, when it was conquered by North African Moorish invaders from the Umayyad Caliphate. While the Visigoths gathered under the leadership of Alaric I, the Ostrogoths strengthened in the Balkan region under Theodoric the Great, ruler of the Ostrogothic Kingdom. Emperor Zeno gave him the position of commander of the Eastern Roman forces, and in 484, he was appointed consul. But Theodoric disliked the Romans and lived in constant hostility against the emperor. To make the Ostrogoths independent, Theodoric invaded and conquered all of Italy, killing with his own hands King Odoacer of the Visigoths. Beginning in 511, Theodoric united and ruled the Visigoth and Ostrogothic kingdoms, forming an empire that lasted until his death in 526. Although Theodoric used only the title king.
Okay, so I'm going to stop there because I want to talk to you about this. Antioch was the very first city that they took down when they went in as refugees. They brought them in to fight in the Roman Wars. They brought them in and they mistreated them terribly. They starved the people. And that war that they did in, you may have heard me teach this before, in Antioch, they didn't have any weapons. They went up against the Romans in Antioch with no weapons. They had no weapons. And so, you know, after they physically took these people down, By hand, okay, by hand. And that's such an incredible story. And so then it's like one city after another just toppled to them as they were going through Rome until they got to Rome. And then they were able, with Alaric, and they called Alaric Moses. They said he was their Moses. And at this point in their history, they had repented. And they had gone through, historians talks about how they had gone through a revival in their country. And so interesting, because now they come in and they are able, because God allowed them to, and they were repentant, they were able to take down their enemy that they had been fighting for 400 years. So, I mean, it's just the most incredible. These stories are so incredible. And they, these people, really, these are our ancestors, and you can see how they suffered to be able to set up their governments that they have today that nobody wants to stand up and even protect. They just allow it to be overflowed with immigrants and make no attempt at all for any national pride that they might have. From everything that has these people fought for, so that, you know, Europe could actually be established. And these were the people that did it. It was the Germans. So they don't even know that history. So now the next group that moves into Europe is the Franks. That is France. That is Reuben. He was the oldest. His mother was Leah, and he had his symbol was the mandrake. And so he would be the most powerful tribe in Europe. And he still is the most powerful. I mean, there's a rival between him and Germany, but some of our Germany may be really Assyria. But he was, when you look at history of Europe, France was really the dominant. They were just dominant through their entire history. Great warriors. The story about these people are incredible. It says he's unstable as water. That basically has to do with sex sins, because these kings, you will notice when you read the history of the Franks, they would go in and have affairs with other people's wives all the time. It was so. Here's the famous dynasty was called the Longhair Dynasty. This is the Merovingians, okay. And the first one was called Merolic, and he was so bad about chasing down other men's wives, they just exiled him back to Germany. But then they had so many wars going on, they brought him back because he was a great military leader. Then after him came in Clovis the First. Clovis is really interesting because, remember, these people were Arians. They were Saturday Sabbath keepers. They were keeping the holy days. They were keeping God's laws because they had been taught this by the 12 disciples, remember? So these guys were in obedience. Now, by the 6th century, Clovis came, and he pretty much united all of France. They gave him that credit. But he switched over to the Catholic Church. He switched the whole empire over to the Catholic Church under his reign. Now, that's incredible. The reason he did it is he married this Merovingian woman, which was another tribe that was near the Franks. He married her, and she was Catholic. So to please her, he enforced the Catholic Church on everybody in France. And from that point on, it has been French, believe it or not. So this is why he's being called unstable as water, because he let his wife influence him and make the decisions that should never have been made. So you see it through history all the time, though. All right, so then you have Charles Martel. Charles Martel is the grandfather of Charlemagne. He was the one that stopped the Moors from coming in, because the Moors lived. Moors had been kicked out of the Middle East. They were kicked out by Nebuchadnezzar. They settled in, and they would have been the tribes of Ammon, and they would have been the tribes of who was Moab. And those people began to migrate themselves into Spain around the 7th century. And they would stay there until the time of Columbus. When at the time of Columbus, which is 1492, we know that date, right? At that point, Isabel and Ferdinand began to push everybody out that was not Catholic. And they set up the Habsburg dynasty. You remember that. So, you know, Charlemagne was the one that stopped them, because the Moors were, at that point, were actually Muslims. He stopped them from migrating into the other parts of Europe. They were cut off, and they lived at the bottom part of Spain all of those years. So this was at the Battle of Tours. He's a very important figure, all right? And then you'd have Charlemagne. Charlemagne would be the one that would cause the migration of the people that are called the Vikings, which we're going to get to. You know, the Franks were they were the ones that established dominance in Europe, okay? And they would, that's the Catholic Church, would crown Charlemagne as the head of the Holy Roman Empire. So it's interesting. All right, so now we want to get to Benjamin. Who is the Vikings? His mother was Rachel, and his symbol is the wolf. And so this is what is written about him. He's like a ravenous wolf. In the morning, he devours his prey, and at night, he divides the spoil. That is talking about the Viking raids. He came out of the area of Sweden, and he moved himself into across the different regions and tried was taken down different, but he was only attacking Catholic monasteries because Charlemagne had gone up earlier and tried to take down Norway and Sweden, and they lost, by the way, because this would be the only tribe of Israel that would not go under Rome. The only one that never went under Rome is Sweden. And so interesting because they're a very bold bunch of people. But I'm going to get into their history. It says that they will dwell between the shoulders. That's because they have another purpose, and it says that they're compared at the end time because they're such isolated warriors. They would fight. It didn't matter who, how many people they would have to fight. They would just take over and do it. If you remember, they fought all of the other 11 tribes and defeated them two times before they were finally taken down by the other 11 tribes in the third battle. This is real warriors right here. Okay. So it says that, oh, children of Benjamin, gather yourself to flee out of Jerusalem and blow the trumpet in Tekoa and the signs, for the violence has appeared out of the north, great destruction. So he plays an end time role as the children that go into the wilderness. Now that's who the Father is comparing us to, that we're going to be those kind of warriors. That no matter what gets thrown at us, we will not submit to it. And that's how we could describe Benjamin. And that's why he sits between the shoulders, because he's going to sit as a counselor between the king and the priest, which is talked about. And I've read this to y'all in Zechariah chapter 5. Okay, so you have that king that's going to be reigning over Israel, and then you're going to have the high priest, and this guy sits in between the shoulders as the counselor, and that's talked about in scripture. So we are being compared to this tribe. We, the people that are the people that are going to be setting up God's kingdom in the wilderness. Okay, so that's who we're being compared to as Benjamin. So let's go.
It was an era when Norsemen explored Europe, crossing seas and rivers, trading, raiding, and colonizing. The Vikings are one of the most well-known people of history. For 300 years between the 8th century and the 11th century, the Vikings raided all over Europe and settled in faraway lands. So let's take a look at the Vikings and how their culture met their demise. The Vikings came from Scandinavia, the modern-day countries of Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. Vikings weren't a people, or ethnicity as such. A better term for these people would be Norse or Norsemen, from the north, and they were mostly farmers. Until the 10th century and beyond, the Norse weren't a united people, having no allegiance to a specific country. They shared a common culture, religion, and language. However, they remained in separate tribes, going on raids for riches and new lands, and sometimes fought against each other. For Viking raids, a ship was essential, and over the centuries the longship was developed. Around the 9th century, the longship had become one of the most powerful naval vessels of the time. What made Vikings so terrifying was their ability to show up out of nowhere, without warning, and with shield, spear, and axe, they would terrify many. The collapse of Roman military rule in the early 5th century left Britain fragmented with numerous small kingdoms. Over the centuries, the Germanic tribes known as the Angles, Jutes, and Saxons migrated over from the Jutland Peninsula, and some ruled as Anglo-Saxon warlords, forming the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms. The Kingdom of Northumbria became a dominant power in Britain, and its king called upon a monk named Aidan. Along with his companions, Aidan was granted the small tidal island of Lindisfarne, on which to found a monastery to further spread the message of Christianity. One of the first Viking raids on the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms came in 793 AD at Lindisfarne, and this is seen as the beginning of the Viking Age. Norwegian Vikings later raided Iona Abbey in Scotland and monasteries in Ireland, and eventually controlled much of the Hebrides and parts of Scotland and Ireland. Monasteries and abbeys made for easy targets, as they were often built by the coast, had little defense, and contained large amounts of wealth. Much of what we know about the Vikings came from monks telling tales of pagans stealing God's wealth, taking people as slaves, and burning villages. Iceland was discovered by accident in the early 9th century and was quickly settled by Norwegians and their slaves. Many in Norway had been fleeing conflict or seeking new land to farm, and Iceland made for a great destination. Leif Erikson set foot on the American continent 500 years before Columbus. However, the settlements in Vinland did not last long, surviving less than a decade. During the Viking Age, Danish Vikings raided along the coasts and rivers in Frisia and France. The Franks fortified bridges along these rivers to act as a defense against the Vikings, but failed to hold off renewed attacks. Under the leadership of Ragnar, they sailed up the Seine River and sacked Paris, only leaving after a tribute of 2,600 kilograms of silver by the Frankish King Charles the Bold. In the year 911 AD, a Viking chief by the name of Rollo was named the Count of Rouen. The King of West Francia gave him this land, and in exchange Rollo converted to Christianity and had to provide protection against future Viking raids. Within a century, Rollo's descendants would form the Duchy of Normandy. And in 1066, Duke William of Normandy would invade England and conquer it, changing history forever. Before this, however, many Danish Vikings came together to invade the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms in 865. Northumbria was captured.
So I'm going to stop right there, and I just want to mention some things about that before we move on from them. Because they would attack monasteries. And this was because of what Charlemagne did. This is because of what Charlemagne did, that he went up there and killed 10,000 of the warriors up there. And this was their revenge. And because that at that time, France had turned Catholic, if you remember. So they were beginning to put monasteries up in Britain at that time. But Britain was under the teaching. She was under the teaching of many of the people that had come out of the Middle East. Joseph of Arimathea and some of those had been teaching the Brits, but they already had accepted. They were believers just like us. I mean, it's hard for us to believe that because we're told that all of these people were pagans. They keep calling them pagans and barbarians. That's what the Romans and the Greeks called them. But they weren't really barbarians in a sense that, and we see them as barbarians. And so interesting, because they only went in to take spoil, which is exactly what it says they would do. That's exactly what it says they would do. Now we want to get to Simeon and Levi. And it tells you here that they were instruments of cruelty. It says that because that of their cruelty, it says, I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So they never got a land inheritance. So the tribes actually had 10 land inheritances, but Simeon and Levi never got any. But Levi, he would still be among the people, and so would Simeon be among the people. But Levi would be the one that would, you know, that would be the priest in Israel, okay? And so there's all kinds of scriptures written about how they were the priest and you know, that they would be the ones that help teach you the word and keep the covenant, okay? So we will be compared to Levitical priest, actually the tribe of Zadok in the future. We will be compared to them. So all of these people had a history. All of them had a history. Now Simeon would go into, he would go into the area of not the northern part of Italy. He would settle in that area, and He would be called the Lombards. I think I have that. This is still talking about, how that how Levi and what his job is. But I thought I had, but the Lombards was the most violent of all tribes, which made perfect sense. That's why the father said they were cruel. And so they had their land taken away from them, which is exactly what history said would happen to them. They were so violent. They were so violent that they worked as mercenaries for Rome, and they were so violent, Rome said, "Forget it. We don't want you anymore. We don't want you anymore." So they would battle in Italy to keep control of a northern Italy, and that's one of the reasons why you see people in southern Italy with dark eyes, dark hair, but in northern Italy you have the white, the light color hair, light color eyes. The reason for it is that's where these people settled. And they had gone in and taken a queen from the Averas, the Avar, the Averas, which is another little group of tribes, right, not too far from where they were in Italy. And that would actually be Assyria. That tribe was a tribe of Assyria. And they took one of the queens and brought her back as one of his as the king's wife, and brought her to the dining room table, and he brought his her father's head to the table in a bucket. Okay, so you can see how violent these people were, and that's exactly why they lost their inheritance. They don't have an inheritance in Europe right now. They don't have one. So, and they were violent even in the old land of Israel. Those were the ones, if you remember, that led the battle because of their sister. We won't get into that whole story. But this is amazing. You can see the pictures being played here of these people. All right, now Judah, believe it or not, Judah is the people that we had just mentioned earlier, which are the Milesians, right? And they would come into Ireland and settle at the top of Ireland, which we know as Northern Ireland. There's all kinds of history between Northern Ireland and Britain. They were constantly at war with one another. Around the 4th century, they would move themselves up, and they were a Jewish tribe. They would move themselves up to the top of Scotland, and they would be the people called the Highlanders. And they came to America. They came in first into Georgia, and they settled Georgia because they were invited in by the 13 colonies. They invited them in because they wanted to use them as a buffer to keep out the Spanish who were in Florida. Remember, the Spanish had settled in Florida. Well, they wanted to keep the Spanish out of the colony. So they basically had brought in these warriors, which are Highlanders. And that's where the Jews come from. That was a tribe of Judah. That was an actual tribe of Judah. Now, their mother would be Leah. I think he was the fourth child, if I'm not mistaken, of Leah. And there's some Jews also in the Middle East. We're not going to give them any slack. We know that there's some there. But it talks about how they will praise. And in the southern churches, they do this hallelujah stuff in the churches with all the singing. And it goes on, talks about they would be a lion's whip from the prey of my son. I've gone up and stooped down and couched as a lion, an old lion. And so he would have the scepter, will not depart from Judah, not a law giver from between his feet. They would be the ruling tribes in all of the tribes of Europe and in England and Britain. Those would be the people that would sit on the throne. Now, the story for that is that when Zedekiah, who was the last king of Judah, sent his princess to Ireland. She married into that line. So that would be Ferez. She would be from the line of Ferez. And she would marry into the line of Zara, which is the Milesian kings. And that would heal the breach between the two twin brothers. Okay. And eventually they would take the throne in Scotland. And if you remember, James the Sixth would sit on the English throne. He was Scottish. He was Scottish. That would be the first time a Scottish king sat on an English throne. Okay, interesting. But, you know, it says they will sit there until Shiloh comes. And then that's going to change hands, is what it's really telling you. And Queen Elizabeth used to say that all the time. She says, when Messiah comes back, I want to be able to hand him my throne. I want to be able to hand him my crown. So interesting, because they realized who they were. They realized that they were the tribe of Judah that would always rule over Israel. So the tribe of Zerah, when it moved in, it came in as the Milesians. All right, this is the history of the Milesians. Remember, I told you they came out of Egypt while they were still in bondage, when the Israelites were still in bondage. There used to be a river that went all the way up through Europe, and they took that river, and they went all the way up, and they went down. They asked for permission to settle somewhere, and they asked the Trojan king in Britain. Now, there was a Trojan king in Britain, and he got there around the 11th century, and his name was Brutus. Okay, and so they asked permission, and he told them they could settle in Spain. So they went down to Spain and settled and stayed there until there was a famine. And then they moved themselves up to Ireland. And the king, the guy who was the father, his name was Gatheus, and his wife was Scotta. That's where you get the name Scotland. And so they talked about this briefly earlier, but that's where you get the name Scotland. It comes from her, and they had five sons. So all five sons would rule Ireland. All five sons would rule Ireland. And interesting, the mom was able to settle there, but the dad was the one that passed away. He passed away before he actually got to the island. So that would be the Milesian people, and they are written in history. They are written in history. They're written as Egyptians, because they didn't realize that they really were coming from that line of Zerah. And that's why the queen, the little princess, went there to marry. So now we get to Zebulun. Zebulun, is ancient name was Phrygia. The Phrygians were very peaceful people, and they were merchants, and they traveled out to different places. They would get goods and services and come back. He would be the sixth son of Leah. And so it says he will dwell by the sea. That would be Holland. They were very open to allowing people to believe what they wanted. These would be the people that let the pilgrims come into their land. And when the King James wrote a letter to the king in Holland, said, send the pilgrims back. He said, they're not causing any trouble and they're not going. So it was recognized as an area that Christians could go to that were being persecuted. They went to Holland. Because they did that, they would be the people that would go to South Africa and find the diamonds. Them and the British went too, but they would find the diamonds. So these people were incredibly poor. But when they took in all these people that were Christians and allowed them to stay in their land and didn't persecute them, allow them to have freedom of religion, it's where that concept came from. Is from the Zebulun. So when they allowed that, then they received all these blessings from the Father. And this goes on. It says they will be near the haven of ships. That's where the Netherlands is. They sit on the shore. And it says, it goes on and it says, they will suck the abundance from the sea and treasures hid in the sand. See, so, and, you know, they would be involved in a lot of oil wells too. You know, this is really the home of Shell Oil and some of the other oil companies. So, it, you know, it's interesting because you can see that the actual history. They would move, remember, to New York. They would name New York Amsterdam, New Amsterdam. And so they settled. They would be merchants. And Scripture talks about them in Ezekiel chapter 17, how they went to this place and they were merchants. And that would be the first place that America would have a capital is in New York. So interesting, they have fascinating history. Just fascinating. All these tribes has fascinating history. They are the ones that are being talked about in the New Testament that are sitting on the sand of the sea. They're sitting on the sand of the sea because the sand of the sea represents the place that you come to keep the Gentile beliefs and people out of your land. So they're your first defense. They're like, it would be like comparing them to Navy SEALs. All right, so going on, it says they also handled the pen for writing because the printing press was invented in Holland. It was invented by the Dutch. And I'm going to show you this. This is the actual history of the printing press, but this Gutenberg actually bought the printing press from the people in Holland. And he set it up and used it. Okay. So he's given credit for it, but they were the ones that actually created it. That's why it says they will handle the pen for writing. So big, big, tremendous things that these people did that were not even recognized for it. Okay, now we get to Issachar. Issachar would be the people in Finland, which I love the land of Finland because it has no migrants in it. Their education system is the best in all of Europe and the Western part of the world. They rank up there with the Chinese. They test off the charts, all their children. It's really funny because you read about their school system. They don't give grades until like the eighth grade. They don't have any. They just teach the kids the techniques and the concepts. And if they don't learn it, they reteach it to them till they get it. And that's how they do. They give no homework. I mean, and they have the longest recesses of all the schools. But they're rated at the very top. These are really your intellectual people. You're going to find that. Their symbol is a donkey. They are also in Switzerland. This is their flag. You can see the star on it. There's a reason for that star. I'll talk to you about it. Issachar is like a strong-ass cash town between two burdens. They were between France and Germany. They were always in between France and Germany. There was fighting going on between the two. That's what this is talking about. The second he becomes a servant of tribute, they love money. These are your intellectuals. These are your people that are probably doctors, probably college professors, on and on and on. The inventors. And how do I know that? Because when we get to this part right here, the princes of Issachar were with Deborah, and it talks about how she used them as advisors. So these were the educated elite of Israel, okay? Now it says, which were men that had understanding of the times. So they will understand, these people will understand prophecy. It also says that they will understand times, which means they could probably also be understanding the calendar. And the brothers were of the covenant. Well, you know, this is where the star comes in right here. It's going to be on every time you see a star on a flag that represents Issachar, because they had something to do with the calendar. So this is Asher. Asher was the tribe that went from Turkey. He lived around the area of Turkey around the Lake Van, and he moved himself into Iceland, and he also moved himself into and his mother was Zilpah. It says he yields royal delicacies. That would be the Belgian waffles, Belgium, all the croissants, all the special sweets that they create. He's accepted among his brothers. He dips his foot in oil. I don't know what it means he dips his foot in oil. I don't understand that. He's the one I know the least about. Not a whole lot is written about him, but he would be also in Iceland and Greenland area. And he also went up into the area around where Sweden is. So he went up into that area also. And I'm not going to get into Britain, because we've talked about Britain a lot. We could probably come back and do their history. We know that they were settled, the Anglo-Saxon people came out of the top part of the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Sweden. They came out and settled in the top of Germany that become Saxony. Then when Rome fell, they rushed in and went into Britain. And they became they had three tribes. You had the Jutes, were Jews. They had the Saxons, and they had the Angles. And those would be the main tribes that were already in Scythia, but they were taken by Odin, King Odin, out of Scythia and brought up into the Scandinavian countries. And that's where Rachel's children lay. Rachel's children were in the Scandinavian countries. The European countries would be Leah's children. And so now it's interesting, because Benjamin would now, I forgot to tell you this, he would come in and he would settle in the top part of Britain. Many of his people would settle in the top part of Britain, which brings all of Rachel's children into England. So you would have Rachel's children in England, and then you would have Leah's children in Europe. I mean, it's a fascinating thing. And of course, you know what the name means for Britain. It means a covenant people. So we knew this. We knew this. Okay. And we knew that all of these people were keeping God's laws, keeping the Sabbath, the holy days. They were still in the original Celtic church until like the 10th, 11th and 12th centuries, then they were being overflowed by the Catholic Church and being brought down. And that would be part of the reason for the Protestant Reformation that would happen two or three centuries later. So I'm going to stop there, because there's just so much to tell you about Joseph. I'm going to stop there. I went really long today. I apologize. I knew it was going to be a long session. So we're going to stop there, and we're going to go ahead and